So I had asked Dr. Stewart to do that for us because October has come on us. This is today, October the 4th. Does anyone need a handout from the back? If you need a handout, we have some of those available to you. On the back of the handout is our focus for the prayer concern. This is number 28, Ethiopia, 28th most difficult country in the world to follow Jesus Christ. And Ethiopia is a country that has quite a history. So we'll be noting that a little bit more today as we kind of take up our discussion. Dr. Stewart has provided us with these details that I've asked him to bring so that we would be updated concerning the resurgence. As he mentioned 2 days ago, President Trump and the First Lady were tested positive for COVID and were in Walter Reed with the treatment that he's just described. The school here for us in Hartford City is just recently returned from closure due to COVID cases in the area. There have been sporting events that have been canceled, not to be rescheduled because of the virus. The athletic director just yesterday posted his return to the hospital after having previously been there for 3 weeks and returned due to respiratory matters. Dr. Stewart mentioned none and now five. Six, was it? Five.
Five.
Okay. Five cases that have come up here. It's here. And people we know and people we know about are indeed contacting COVID. And they're saying from the public health schools that there will be a resurgence. And it gets published like this. This comes from the University of Minnesota. And there's also John Hopkins University School of Public Health that's in this article. And the report comes like this. March 1918, century ago, March 1918 brought the first and moderate wave of the Spanish flu. Cases fell over the summer, but 6 months later, that's October, 6 months later, in the fall, the epidemic exploded. That was followed by a smaller peak in early 1919. Then, it says, the pandemic ended. The influenza pandemics of 1957, 1958, 2009 swine flu all followed a similar pattern. In that scenario, they report, in that scenario of that reoccurring pattern, COVID-19 would return with more ferocity in the late summer and fall, then dissipate, settling into smaller but near constant number of cases. And this is, according to the scenario, is going to carry out into 2022. Someone had said the other day in a post that you have to think about this. It was rather humorous. When the new year comes, they're going to have to say 2021. That 2021, it won. Kind of a little play on words. So that's the statement from Public Health. John Piper had written a book just fairly recently, came out in about April, about Christ and COVID. And in here, he talks about that 1918 swine, or not swine, but Spanish flu. And he says this, in the global influenza epidemic of 1819, using the CDC estimates, 50 million people around the world died. Over 500,000 of those in the United States. That's in 1919. And Dr. Stewart said 209,000 here in the United States for this. People felt symptoms in the morning and were dead by nightfall, he reports. Bodies were picked up from front porches to be carried away to graves dug by steam shovels. A man was shot for not wearing a mask. Schools were closed, and ministers spoke of Armageddon. And of course, you know what that refers to. That refers to the battle with the satanic forces under the Antichrist, and ministers spoke of that. After that, I had what I referred to that as after having read some of that by John Piper, I picked up the magazine which came to our house yesterday on Christian books being distributed. And I just flipped it open as I was kind of standing around waiting on the conclusion of dinner's preparations. And what I flipped to said this, when the world stops, it's written, recently published book, in this pandemic, is it the final plague before the book of Revelation? And ministers spoke of Armageddon. That's published here. Is it the last plague in the book of Armageddon? Are we living in the quote-unquote last days before Christ returns? What should we do with government guidelines, such as wearing masks? So ministers spoke, and ministers are still speaking like that. As a matter of fact, the book that's right above that one is Survive the Day, talking about the afflictions that come our way. You know, having said that, I want to bring up this. In pandemic times, who speaks for God? Ministers spoke. Armageddon. Ministers are still speaking. President Trump spoke about the pandemic. He had heard that this pandemic had come according to the will of God. And he said, this didn't come from God. It came from, let's see, what country did he say? Oh, yeah. Who speaks for God? In a book called God and Pandemic, a guy named N.T. Wright talks about the church. And I want you to hear this because he is a minister in England, teacher, and in shepherding ministry. Many people in churches have reached for Christian reactions. He says the world is full of conspiracy theories, the world. And some Christian reactions have been the same, saying this, some in America say it's all China's fault. Oh, yeah, that was the country. It's all China's fault. Some in China, and remember that China has a very large population, and though percentage-wise, the Christians are small because it's such a large population, they have 75 million professed believers. And Christendom has over 105 million, 75 who are believers in Christ, so it's presented. And some in China saying, it's America's fault. Isn't that interesting? No doubt there are thousands of other ideas running around. And Christian conspiracy theories are there. Some people are saying stuff like this. This is the sign of the end. The end times. And I've just referenced some of those. Other Christians are saying this is simply a way, of saying the moment of opportunity is upon us. Now that everyone is thinking about death rather than wondering what cupcake to buy, perhaps there'll be a massive turning to the Lord. Perhaps. And if we have opportunity, like any other time, show and tell, right? Show and tell. Others are quoting Old Testament prophets and saying that it must be that God has done it because he's responsible for everything. So that must mean that he is angry with us for something. I've heard these, quoting Amos saying, God will not do anything unless he reveals it through his prophets. And there's lots of prophets telling us what God is angry about. Angry concerning the world's need to repent of sexual sin. That's big. And that this is happening because governments haven't adequately prepared. Or it's just part of the ecological crisis that we have. Many prophets speaking. Question, who speaks for God? Who does? You know, there are books like what John Piper has written, Erwin Lutzer has written. He's written a book called Pandemic, Plagues, and Natural Disasters. What is God saying to us? That was just published this year also. And Lutzer going on, and I'm taking a little bit of time with you on this because I want to establish the background. Lutzer goes on and say, if this isn't enough, the COVID grief, at the highest level of COVID, we also had tornadoes come up in the South that flattened homes, destroying neighborhoods, killing dozens. In some instances, a parent was killed, or in some instances, a parent was killed and their children lived. Many families suffered loss of one kind or another. So in addition to the COVID, which we've just heard the statistics about, there's the tornadoes in the South. And the U.S. Congress, get this, directed the Federal Reserve to create trillions of dollars. And this was done by fiat. That is, money was just created electronically to flood the banks with liquidity so we didn't have a run-on. Such bailouts have created a whole new sense of government dependency and an entitlement. People will continue to expect free money. And that's kind of been a bit yet in the plan, given that it can be created so easily. God, pandemic, natural disasters. You know, the natural disasters don't end there. We have fires. on the West Coast. I mean, major fires going on in the West Coast. And racial tension. Racial tension so much so that I've heard repeatedly, here in the midst of all of this economic woe, now people are getting their businesses burned down in riots. Huh. Not only here in the United States, but while the epidemic has been spreading around the world, there's been plagues in other countries. Ethiopia, which is the one we're praying for right now. Kenya and Somalia, they have a grasshopper plague. Two generations of locusts are set to descend on East Africa again, 400 times stronger. What this will mean is that the ravenous creatures eating their own weight per day destroy food crops in those countries. No doubt there'll be people starving. God and pandemics, plagues, natural disasters. Who speaks for God? Who speaks for Him? God in the pandemic. I want to assert something very, very strongly, and it's not that I'm the first to assert this. It's been asserted fairly recently by people like Francis Schaeffer, Chuck Colson, folks who've now passed from this life. But before them, it was asserted by people like Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Zechariah, Isaiah, saying stuff like this, "The word of the Lord came to me, saying, the word of the Lord was in my mouth, and I. Thus saith the Lord." Over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, we hear this, "He does quite nicely for himself." Who speaks for God? President Trump doesn't think God did it, so he says. China did it. Others? God is telling us it's time to repent. Who speaks for him? And especially in a pandemic time, my point, as others have said before, is God does quite nicely in speaking for himself. And we are going to hear him speak directly for himself by turning with me to Psalm 91 this morning. In Psalm 91, God speaks to us directly. Psalm 91, and here's what "Thus saith the Lord" brings to us. Psalm 91 is a very, very, very interesting psalm. Psalm 91 does not give us any historical background. It doesn't tell us who wrote it. It doesn't tell us what the situation was. Look at Psalm 90 in comparison. Psalm 90, the psalm right before 91 where you're looking now, says this. The first statement in the Hebrew Bible says a prayer of Moses, the man of God. Moses wrote this. Moses wrote this as a prayer during his lifetime. Again, the previous psalm to Psalm 90, Psalm number 89, says a maskel of Ethan the Ezrahite. That refers to a particular setting and a time and how this was used. Psalm 90 doesn't do that. Psalm 91 does not tell us a setting in history like so many of the Psalms do, nor does it tell us the circumstance, nor does it tell us who wrote this. It just quotes God directly. And if you want to see that with me, turn down in Psalm 91 to the very last statements, beginning at verse number 14, where it says this, because, quoting God, because he holds fast to me in love, I will deliver him. I will protect him because he knows my name. When he calls to me, I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will rescue him and honor him. With long life, I will satisfy him and show him my salvation. That is the direct quote from God, which seems by application to be here for any point in time. And the point in time that he's referring to, slide up to verse 3, is a time when there is deadly pestilence. That's what he refers to. Look with me at verse 3. For he, referring to the God that he spoke about above, Yahweh, that God who Jesus identified himself as being, for he, Yahweh, will deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the deadly pestilence. That term, deadly pestilence. And I brought with me a big book. It's commentary here, and a commentary on that exact statement, deadly pestilence. The reference here, and this comes from John MacArthur, in verse 6, is specifically to dreaded diseases, plagues, and epidemics. God is talking here without specific definition to times of deadly pestilence. Verse 4, he will cover you with his feathers or pinions, and under his wing you will find refuge. His faithfulness is a shield and buckler. You will not fear the terror of the night, nor the arrow that flies by day, nor the pestilence, that plague, that pandemic that stalks in darkness, in obscurity, nor the destruction that lays waste at noon. Point that I'm making here, God speaks for himself, and he does it in this passage, Psalm 91. Now, I want to tell you a word of personal testimony here on Psalm 91. The testimony is like this. Since February and March of this year, I have spoken to many people, many, many, many people, and it still goes on, outside the church, inside the church. I've spoken to them relative to the COVID-19 pandemic. I've spoken to them relative to the resurgence or the resurgence of it coming up in October. And I've spoken about that and worked with them in reference to making preparation and handling the issue. I've done it in groups, I've done it individually, I've done it in counseling. And in counseling situation, there was this whole thing of dealing with COVID. And how do we do it? Well, who speaks for God on that? He does quite nicely for himself. And what brought me to this passage is this statement right here, verse 5, which has a particular application for me. You will not fear the terror of the night. Now, I want you to know quite frequently it's at night this apprehensions gripped me. Apprehensions about what am I doing and the circumstances and what about Isaiah and what about Abraham and what about all of those things, and the terror grips me by night. And it was this passage in counseling that I discovered this wonderful truth that we're looking at here about going along with God in pandemic times. And what we're going to look at are just these two points, because these two points are very simply what this psalm is telling us. God is speaking for himself, and he's speaking about going along with him in pandemic times. And this is the word of the Lord, and he's quoted directly here. Now, it talks initially in verses 1 through 14, 1 through 13, excuse me, about God and our protection. Then it speaks to us about God and his promise, verse 14 through 16. And the admonishment here is to be holding on to it, to God in his protection, to be holding on to this. And God in his promise is him holding on to you. Now, in order for you to see the whole picture here, I'm going to, right from the start of this, lay out how this thing unfolds here. In God providing for us, or providing for us in protection, that we're to be holding on to it, we are given first the details of God's protective coverage. There is the fine print here. Now, you know that when there is a coverage, an insurance kind of program, they have fine print. And usually the fine print is disclaimers of things that are not covered. In this, when God details his protective coverage of us, he is not giving disclaimers, but proclaimers of what his protective coverage will be, what it is. And then he tells us how he's going to go about the delivery of his protective coverage to us. I want you to see the big picture from the beginning. Then we're going to see God directly expressing here what he will do. Six times over, he says, I will, I will, I will, I will. Six times over, delivering promises on what he will do. Who speaks for God? Who speaks for him? He speaks quite nicely for himself. And his ask of us is that we hold on to what he's communicating to us, that we hold on to this. And then he's telling us in promise how he will hold on to you in this. He speaks quite nicely for himself. Let's take a look initially at the detail here of God's protective coverage. The detail. He starts out in verse 1 by telling us this. Do you see this sign here? I took this picture this morning. It's a little blurry. I'm sure it seems that way. I took it in the rain. I took it just this morning, just down from my house, because every time I look out my kitchen window, I see this sign, this bulletin board, this billboard, this roadside sign. And if you notice, that's my neighbor's house right there. And this sign is concerning insurance for the road that lies ahead. And some of you know this, it's by Smith's Insurance Company. Some of you probably are participants in that insurance. I don't know. That is a good picture for us concerning God's protective coverage. for the road that lies ahead. And the first thing he does is he details his protective coverage for us, is he tells us the conditions, the condition of who this belongs to. And by the way, as I mentioned, this is the fine print detail, and it's the proclaimer, not the disclaimer, that God has concerning this protective coverage. Notice with me, he says this very clearly. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High, that is the one. That's the one who will abide in the shadow or the shade of the Almighty. He who dwells, that word for dwell means somebody. Well, if you're talking about a person individually, it means to sit down in a chair and settle in, kind of like you did for this morning with your own chairs, socially distanced and all of that here. It means to settle. If it's a relationship like it is here with God, it means that you enter into a binding covenant, like in a marriage, a binding covenant relationship. And it's where you settle in and start to live. You live here. He who lives in the shelter, that's called the secret place. As a matter of fact, that's the literal translation. It's a place that is known to you and to God in this relationship where you settle in with Him in an ongoing live with interact. He with you, you with Him, handling life. He who dwells in that kind of a special place, this shelter of God, he is the one, he says, who will abide under the protective shade of the Almighty. You know, during this October time, was this past week, got up pretty hot. Not today. Not going to get up hot today. But some of these days, it's really cold in the morning. Have you noticed that? And then the sun comes up and it gets really hot. I've been outside working a little bit on my porch because it's needed some attention. And you know, when this sun comes up and you're outside, it's kind of like, here you up 80 degrees when you'd been freezing in the morning, and you go under the overhang of that porch, and it's just like, whew. This was a very arid place. It was very hot, and this sun was brutal. And the picture here is that when you are in this relationship with the Lord, where you've settled in interactively with Him, in that special place, He provides that protective shade. That's who belongs to. And the Psalm writer encouraging us tells us right away, we need to personally get involved in this. We need to go here on our own. We need to jump on this. Notice what he says, verse 2. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, the one I run to in time of trouble, the one who is my protection, a mighty fortress is our God. Martin Luther said, my fortress, my God in whom I trust. Now, question. Your relationship with the Lord. Have you settled into a place that's you and God? It's kind of a personal place with Him. And it's interactive and it's ongoing. That's the challenge. That's the application here. It's the condition on who this protective coverage belongs to. As a matter of fact, Charles Spurgeon, writing on this, said this, and I want to quote him. The blessings here are promised not for all believers, but for those who live in close fellowship with God. Every child of God looks toward the inner sanctuary, that place. Yet all do not dwell in that most holy place. They run to it at times and even enjoy occasional approaches, but they do not habitually reside in the mysterious presence of God. Luther, writing on this, says the older he gets, the more he sees this mysterious presence of God, this secret place, this shelter between you and Him that you habitat, you inhabit, you live there. That's this belongs to. And that's the condition. That's the condition that he says for this protective coverage of God. Then he adds the reasons for choosing this. Notice with me verse 3. He says the reason here. For God will deliver him from the snare of the fowler. We saw a couple of those during the presidential debates, by the way. A couple of attempted snares by someone who wanted to. The word is used for somebody who's trying to catch a bird. So he trying to trap it. And that kind of went on back and forth between in trying to catch them in the snare of the fowler. And he says from the deadly pestilence, which I've already described to you is the pandemic. It is epidemic. As a matter of fact, this word deadly is very interesting because it means to, in its root word, to breathe properly, and therefore there exists something that is going to pounce on you. It's going to engulf you. That's deadly. And pestilence or plague that he uses here is a term for a disease that can bring ruin. It can bring ailment, illness. The reasons for choosing this is because God says He will deliver from those. Picture, He will cover you with His feathers. It's like a parent bird. I don't know exactly what the word for a parent bird is. But Jesus referred to it. He said, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how many times would I have gathered you like a hen gathers her chicks? But you would not. This is what God is promising here. He will cover you. He will have you under His wings where you will find refuge. His faithfulness, His reliability, His stability, His being there and handling this will be a shield to you, and it will surround you. You know, some of these superheroes, they have these amazing things of force fields and shield, the agents of shield, and they bring this up and it just bounces off everything. This, with that picture, is the promise that's recorded here about what God delivers. Reasons for choosing. Excuse me, I went too far. There we go. The results of this are highlighted. These are the benefits of His protective care that's stated. Notice with me. You will not fear the terror of the night. That which is called panic attack by some people. It's anxiety that arises. For me, that comes just about in the night after you're just kind of losing it, but getting it back, waking up, going to sleep. And there is when that fear comes over, the terror of the night. As a matter of fact, I've spoken about this with a couple of different people, and they refer to the same kind of thing going on in their life. And God says here, you will not fear that which is the terror of the night. It'll be there, but you won't fear it, nor the arrow that flies by the day, nor the pestilence, that thing that jumps to engulf you as a disease, that stalks you in the darkness, in the obscurity, which COVID was very obscure at the beginning of it. It's called novel COVID, or the new novel coronavirus. Thank you. The novel coronavirus. Got it. And then he pictures this thing. I'm going to move this up to tell you the circumstances here. He pictures this thing, this protective coverage. Get this. He wants this picture to come home. 1,000 may fall at your side and 10,000 may fall at your right hand, but it will not come near you. That's an amazing promise. That is an amazing promise. Only you will look with your eyes and see the recompense of the wicked. Now, I want you to know that that statement lets us know that these times of pandemic that he's referred to here a couple, three times, those things are actually a micro snapshot for us to see. There's a micro snapshot for us to see what will be the consequences of those who are hostile to God. The wicked here are those who are not lined up with him. The consequences to them is that you will see the recompense. I want you to know that this time helps us to see the frailty and the fragileness of human beings. Not only is it true of COVID, it's been true of the Spanish flu, it was true of the Asiatic cholera, it was true over and over, it was true of the Black Plague. These things come on and it just kind of undermines humanity. You know, we don't want to be, you know, rude, but we stand off from each other. Social distancing is what we call it. Wearing masks. And why? Because of the frailty of humanity. And it was worse during the time of the plague, the Black Plague, when some people were ministering there. People who we know, Martin Luther, those kinds of plagues. And that falling of man is just an indication in a micro shot of what's going to be far worse. When those who are hostile to God have unleashed on them the judgment of their hostility. You think it looks frail now? I want you to know the worst is yet to come. You'll see This is a micro shot of seeing the recompense on the wicked. God's judgment on the wicked. And his promise here is not that you won't get COVID. His promise here is that you are not going down like thousands of others and 10,000 beside you. You're not going down for your sin. He'll protect you. He will keep you. He will watch over you. This thing really gets interesting here. Because in a bit, when we look here at this next section, where we look at God's delivery of this protective care, we see an interesting complications. First of all, in verse 9, he reviews the condition. Because you have made the Lord your dwelling place. We heard that already. Yes, the Most High, who is my refuge. Because of that, the promise is no evil, no harm will be allowed to fall on you. No plague is going to come near your tent. This is God in pandemic times. That's the condition, because you're living there with him. You're tight. You're inhabiting with him. It's not coming on you. Then he talks about the actions he will take. Look at this with me, these actions. For he will command his angels concerning you to guard you in all your ways. On their hands, on the palms of their hands, they will bear you up, lest you strike your foot against a stone. How much is God in control on this? You don't stub your toe without him being in charge. Can't happen. Angels are guarding you. You know, that verse was quoted in the New Testament. Do you remember where it was quoted? You remember who it was quoted by? This verse that we just read, not striking your toe against a rock, was quoted by Satan. When he was tempting Jesus. And of course, Satan kind of twisted it a little bit, just like he twisted what God said with Adam and Eve. So he twisted here a little bit when he quoted it to Jesus. What he left out was, he will guard you in all your ways. What he said is, he will give his angels command over you. On their hands they will bear you up, lest you strike your foot against a stone. And you remember what he was asking Jesus to do? What he did was he took Jesus up to the pinnacle of the temple. And he said, throw yourself down, because go ahead and presume on God. Go ahead, throw yourself on him. Presume on him, because he won't let you strike your foot without an angel's guarding over you. Remember what Jesus said? Jesus said, you don't presume on God. You don't tell God what he needs to do and thus throw yourself into it. No, you don't presume on God. The way he said it was this: you shall not tempt the Lord your God. You don't put him in the situation where you're forcing his hand and presuming on him. You know, Martin Luther went through pandemic times. Charles Spurgeon went through the Asiatic cholera, pandemic times. And he described those situations and ministering day after day after day when there was illness and death. Martin Luther, in these pandemic times, said this: take precautions, and serve. Serve people. Charles Spurgeon, during the time of that Asiatic cholera, was going through the streets of London. He was on Dover Street, and he looked down, and there was a little shop that hung this verse out. "This will not come near you." And as he was reviewing all of his anxieties of doing this, he was so encouraged by that truth from Psalm 91 that he found vigor and strength to take precautions and to serve. Do not presume on God by giving up precautions, because we're well instructed on precautions. His promise is that he will guard you in this. So like Martin Luther and like Charles Spurgeon, the time of difficulty are times for believers to be creative and to minister and serve creatively. I wear a mask. I wear a mask very thoughtfully because on a weekly basis, I interact with people with cancer. Plural, I said. Take precautions and serve. Don't let Satan tempt you like he did Jesus to think, "It's my time, it's my time. Just throw it to the wind." Take precautions. And it's not for you only, but it's to serve. It's to serve. It's to serve. Actions taken on our behalf. The securities then that God promises here. Look at this. You will travel life's road. You will tread on the lion. You will tread on the otter. The young lion and the serpent you will trample underfoot. It's this thing about the road ahead that he's talking. And there is security here as you're dwelling in this place with the Most High. There is. Final point. Final point is this. God in His promise. God in His promise, after detailing what He's doing and the delivery system, angels are attending you on this. It can't happen outside of God's will. It can't happen. Don't presume on Him. Take precautions. Serve. Directly, God expresses this. Notice, first of all, He repeats the condition. This is the third time He stated the condition here. He says it, because you hold fast to Me in love, because you cling to Me in this dwelling place that you're living in. Three times over He says that. Then He states God's commitments. I want you to look at this with me. Verses 14 through 16. Notice how many times it here, as He quotes God, God is saying, "I will." Six times over. "I will deliver him. I will protect him because he knows My name. I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will rescue and honor him. I will satisfy him with long life and show him My salvation." He gets over and over eight promises. And I would so love just to preach on these promises, just to do this. But time will not allow it right now. And that's probably a good thing, because you can look at it on your own. Let me summarize this. Let me take it back, because some of you are still writing. Eight promises that are given. Promises that He will answer in prayer. Promises that He... Well, you know, it's very... Let me just do this a little bit, okay? Just a little bit. "I will deliver him" means that I will pick him up and carry him. I will carry him away from troubles. This is the confidence we have. He says to us, "I will deliver him. I will protect him, which means that when he picks you up, he will put you in a place that is completely inaccessible. It's too high. I remember I used to work with a boss that was pretty short, and he liked the candy, so some of the people around the work office put the candy up real high. So he was on. That's what he's saying here. He sets you up real high, that it can't reach you. It can't reach you. This is an amazing promise of God. I will hear their prayers. I will be with them. I will honor them. I will satisfy them. For sure, God has spoken. Jesus heard him. Jesus acknowledged him. Jesus, when he was tempted by Satan, quoted when Satan tried to twist what God said it here and get us to presume on it. Indeed, God has spoken to us. And I have attempted to talk about some other people who agree that God has spoken, like Chuck Colson, Francis Schaeffer, John Piper, Erwin Lutzer, John MacArthur, Charles Haddon Spurgeon. Some others that I've talked about, to all kind of review that God has spoken and it's registered with people. Martin Luther, okay, take precautions and serve. Spurgeon, take precautions and serve. And you and I want to emphasize this truth, which I gave at the close of last week's message, and it resonated with our people. It resonated with those here. I hope it resonated with those who are online. This is it. Fear God, meaning giving him the respect that belongs to him, and an apprehension of not going his way, but a respect that belongs to him, that you put him in your place with what he has to say. Fear God, and you will fear nothing else. You will fear nothing else. Doesn't mean you won't take precautions. Absolutely not. You will. Because you fear God, you will not presume on him. Fear God, and you will fear nothing else. But if you don't fear God, then you will fear most everything else. You'll fear that I will lose my freedoms if I give in to this control. You'll fear that the Christian nation will be slipped away from us if we don't. Can I tell you something? I do not fear the pandemic. I do not fear the loss of our freedoms in this nation. I do not fear that Christian liberties may well go away in this country. I don't fear that. I don't fear any of it. And here's why. Because God, in his place, told us not to fear man who can only take your life. Fear God, who can take your life and cast you for eternity. Choose to fear him. And as a result, we don't fear anything else. Doesn't mean we won't take precautions. Doesn't mean we won't be aware, alert. Doesn't mean I won't snatch a kid out of the street because of what could happen. What I fear doesn't mean that. does mean that God will be with me in trouble, like he promises, and he will answer. This is great stuff, isn't it? This is absolutely great stuff that you can count on. We can bank on this. This is his commitment. Nothing's going to happen to you. You won't strike your foot against a stone without him accomplishing his eternal purpose. So respect him and fear nothing else. Father, you are our Father and our God, and you have spoken. And Spurgeon and Luther and MacArthur and Piper and so many others have concurred. Help us to dwell in this secret place with you. Help us to be committed to live there, because your commitments are so strong. In Jesus' name, amen. Stand with me for this song.